Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. And today's show is one that comes unexpected to me and to many of the rest of us. Suddenly, it is time to say goodbye to Jeff Benson. Many knew Jeff within his leadership and advocacy role as an Ames City planner. Obviously, I knew him well, too, because I'm already choked up and we just got started. He was a licensed landscape architect who began working as a city planner in 2001. Before then, he attended Iowa State University, receiving his bachelor degree in landscape architecture and a master's in community and regional planning. It was common to see Jeff visiting businesses around town. And many a night, when channel surfing through cable TV, one could come across the image of Jeff on Channel 12, sitting in what was usually an empty chamber room, in patient discourse about the technicalities of project implementation with the Ames City Council, all the while making it sound like a good talk with a friend. For those of us of a certain age, baby boomers that is, his passing is a fundamental shift. This show is getting harder to do than I thought. We knew Jeff as a formidable comrade in our collective adventure. He grew up with us in Ames and lived most of his life here, generating a spirit and energy that created natural connection and well-being among many of us. I asked Jeff's family to describe him, and they said he loved Ames, his family, his yard, and he embodied the essence of courage. Stay with us this next hour and learn about Jeff with us and honor him with us. I have a few folks to help me do that and to speak about Jeff. City Councilwoman Gloria Betcher is here. Welcome.
Thank
Gloria.
You.
We're also joined by Charlie Kuster and Ray Anderson. Charlie and Ray are city planners in the Department of Planning and Housing, Jeff's co-workers. Welcome to KHOI Studio.
Thank you.
A little later in the show, I'd like to play for you a recording of a lecture that Jeff gave last year about the history of Ames, and we'll give Jeff the last word on the show. Councilwoman Betcher, would you please start us off with a statement on behalf of the City of Ames?
Ursula, I'm sure that the mayor would have wanted to be here to make this statement for the city, but she's in Turkey and unable to do that. So I was asked to do it because I've known Jeff for many years. In fact, I think I've known him since he started working at the city in his role as a neighborhood planner and liaison. What many people might not realize about Jeff and about the rest of our excellent planning staff members is that their jobs are not 8 to 5. They spend many hours in evening meetings with citizens and the city council, and those minutes turn into hours after the regular work day. One of the things that was noted to me after Jeff's passing by several neighborhood representatives who've worked with Jeff over the years is how willingly he gave of his time outside regular hours to help them be a part of the city's planning process, to help them understand projects that would impact them, and to ensure that they felt they were part of what was happening in city planning. He worked with the Main Street Cultural District and the Campus Town Action Association and our many neighborhood organizations to ensure that they had reliable information. People said that they relied on Jeff's expertise, that he was a tireless advocate for historic preservation, which I know firsthand as the former chair of the Historic Preservation Commission, and that he was always kind and willing to take calls and questions at any hour to help them understand better what the processes of this city meant for them and the projects they were working on. Jeff, like so many of our committed longtime city staff, was the embodiment of the city's philosophy of excellence through people. He was a wonderful man, and he's going to be sorely missed by his colleagues at the city and by the citizens of Ames who had the honor to work with him. And I'm very saddened by his passing, as are so many of us at the city. And I'm happy to have been able to call him a friend.
Thank you, Gloria. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And I'm your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. And we are taking the time today to observe the passing of Jeff Benson, an important, influential community member and a community builder who meant a great deal to many of us, myself included. Gloria gave us an outline of some of the work he did. We're also joined by Charlie Kuster and Ray Anderson. Charlie and Ray are city planners in the Department of Planning and Housing.
Yes.
Yes. Can you help us understand a little bit just what Jeff's work was?
Well, whenever we have
planning students from Iowa State and asked what planners do, we always just scratch our head. It's policy, it's economics, it's statistics, it's site plan review. We are trying to serve the citizens of the community and trying to realize what their goals and visions are. In the city of Ames, those goals and visions are kind of encapsulated in the land use policy plan. And until the elected representatives change that policy plan, that's the staff's policy.
And as Jeff's coworkers, can you tell us more about Jeff's work and accomplishments?
Certainly. This is Ray. Jeff was not only involved in countless projects for the city over the years, but he was an integral part of so many programs that are established and will continue now into the future. Many of those have to do with neighborhoods, both commercial and residential. He was very involved with the Downtown Facade Grant Program, was just starting the Campus Town Facade Grant Program. There's the Urban Revitalization Tax Abatement Program that he was very integral in. Strong Neighborhoods, Ames Repair and Care Volunteer Program. It just goes on and on. The Downtown Facade Grant Program is a program where there's a $15,000 grant available for storefronts downtown. As you'll notice, the changes that have occurred in the last 10 years, it's just a transformation. And most recently, projects that he worked on in Campus Town, some of the new construction going on, there's a tax abatement program for that. And they have to meet certain criteria. The block trailer program.
This is a trailer that you can have help make a block party?
Yeah, it has all the various things in it that you need for a block party. Games, mm-hmm. Very popular. People reserve that block trailer for weekend events in their neighborhood, and it's booked for the year. Neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Jeff was all about making connections with neighborhoods, getting to know the people in those neighborhoods.
Charles?
I kind of came in a bit later into the city. I've known Jeff for about 20 years, but only been working with him for about 7. And one of the things I immediately kind of tagged into with him was his work with Story County, the city of Gilbert, and the whole Ames Urban Fringe Plan. One of the successes that we've had is this intergovernmental cooperation on land use development within 2 miles of the city of Ames. It includes the city of Gilbert and Story County. We have been working with Boone County to a lesser extent, but it's to identify a shared vision of future land use development in that area. And then these are areas where we're going to allow some limited amounts of development, but kind of at a more rural density standard. It saved a lot of bureaucratic back and forth between the entities. The whole policy was kind of based on, you know, some very broad principles of what is the purpose of land use planning. And I always remember when we get frustrated with specific development questions, he'd always go back and pull out those initial principles and remind us, why are we doing this in the first place? What have we already agreed is important? And then everything will flow from looking back at those principles.
He was a problem solver.
He was. He would take us back to the fundamentals of what we're doing, why we're doing it, and it did help us come to those conclusions based on the initial premises.
For those that may have not known Jeff, what do you think he really brought to the job as a person?
Jeff was a people person.
Yeah.
In the truest sense of that, he loved people. He loved the community of Ames and had very much a passion for maximizing the quality of life for the citizens of Ames. And he was so engaged with neighborhoods, with the various customers we worked with, all the boards and commissions and the city council. Jeff, he was an educator. He had a way of communicating very complex concepts and policies and regulations and proposals to individuals, to neighborhoods, to the community as a whole. I was just always amazed at how he could take a complex thing and just communicate it so well that everyone in the room would understand.
And actually, it would sound somehow like a friendly conversation, not a technical conversation. It was very quality.
I think his strength was his demeanor.
His demeanor.
He's passionate about what he did, but he conveyed it in just a calm, serene way. In the office, I've never seen him get angry. He's always enjoying the interruptions that come in, mm-hmm. when people always want to talk to him. He was just willing to engage with people individually, mm-hmm. or small groups.
He was very patient and unflappable about anything mm-hmm. in citizen meetings.
Very measured.
Yes, and I think when you're dealing with citizens who can be rather upset by some changes that might impact their neighborhoods and their quality of life, meetings can get rather heated. And Jeff always seemed to be able to take that input and dial down the level of anxiety and frustration in his handling of those meetings.
I want to explain his support of his coworkers. You know, we all take different items to boards and commissions. Sometimes the agenda is quite long. Sometimes one staff member might be done at 7:10. There's no reason to stay for the other items. Jeff always stayed for all the items. The meeting could last 3 hours. He would be done at 7:15, but he would be in that seat in the council chambers supporting the rest of the staff and being there just to show that staff is on whoever's speaking side, that he's got our back, so to speak. Mm-hmm. He was dedicated to the job.
Mentioned earlier that he loved Ames. In this case, it's really not a cliche. It's something that I think everybody felt. What do you think Jeff enjoyed about his work?
I think it was the meeting people, the neighborhood organizations that he worked with, the individuals within those organizations. Growing up here, like he did, I didn't, he had just a great detail not only of the geography of the community but of the individuals within the neighborhoods.
He loved the history of Ames. He had a vision for the future. He did an excellent job of communicating to others in the community the policies that the council adopted. He just had a passion, and that came through in his work every day. He came in the office, and you know, he was ready to go.
What would you say that you take away from having worked with Jeff?
I really admired Jeff. The way he approached his work, the way he lived his life.
Being a city planner, our job is not to make the decisions, it's to make recommendations to city council. And those decisions were not always accepted. Staff's recommendation was not always followed. It's not something that Jeff would get his hair up and dander up over. It was part of the job. He recognized that he did his best to explain what staff's position was on a particular issue. That's what I enjoy, I mean, about him. He had passion for the position, but he also was willing to represent his role in that position. And if things didn't go his way, he was not flustered at all about it. He was just willing to maybe next time better explain staff's position, provide more evidence of why we recommend what we recommend.
Not only was he a good communicator, he was an excellent listener. It wasn't about him.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he was a good model for a public servant.
Yeah, very much mm-hmm. so.
Gloria, what did you get from knowing Jeff?
I think Jeff had a tremendous amount of stamina. It's a difficult job that he did. Seeing the planners, all of the planners in that office and the hours that they put in, I am amazed at how dedicated all of them are. But in Jeff's case, he had some physical challenges that also made it a little bit more difficult for him. And you never heard him say anything about those challenges. He was doing his job and doing it excellently always. So when I would see Jeff at these meetings, I would think, Jeff is at another meeting. He's at another picnic for a neighborhood. He would show up for events that I think some of us as city council members might say, well, if it fits my schedule, I'll be there. Jeff would make room on the schedule to be there.
He never let his physical limitations stop him, never drew attention to that, never seemed to give it a second thought. You know, whatever activity there was, he was a full participant. And we talked about his work with the neighborhoods. You know, he did all the hard work with the neighborhoods and trying to come to a consensus and communicating their concerns. But these neighborhoods, they also had these weekend potlucks, usually once a year. And I remember a weekend last year that there were three potlucks. And I said, Jeff, are you going to all three of those? And he said, oh, absolutely, yes. And I said, how are you going to do that? And he said, Ray, don't you know by now I've never seen a potluck I didn't like?
He liked people a lot.
Oh, very much, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he got to know people.
His overall commitment to doing his job well and to making it part of his life as opposed to simply another job that he was doing. I cannot say enough about how much I respect him for that.
Mm-hmm. Jeff lived on crutches, and I met Jeff in first grade when he moved to Ames from Lincoln, Nebraska. We were at Edwards School. He was our first experience with disability. That was really my first introduction to other realities in life that most of us kids didn't have to think about. And Jeff was strong and brave from the beginning. He really set a model for being somebody who made a place for himself. Very, very respectable person. Speaking of personal lives, we have somebody who's called in who knows the other side of Jeff Benson. Jeff Benson, the musician. Al, are you with us?
Yeah, hi.
Hi, this is Al Biela, who's has a local business here on Main Street. So tell us about Jeff the musician.
Well, Jeff was a drummer, and he was actually in the first band that I kind of got involved in people's basements back in junior high and high school. And, boy, all these things that I'm hearing people echo about Jeff really fit my picture of him so well. You know, he's the drummer, very physical.
What was the
role
name
in the band?
What was the name of the band, Al?
The very first band for me was Speed Limit.
Speed Limit,
yes. Very,
I remember.
Very kind of edgy 60s. We were inspired by the Speed Limit sign. And actually, over that time period through junior high and high school and then after high school, I did a couple different bands with Jeff after Speed Limit. Then we had a band called Tommy. It actually originally started out as Tommy Ryan Hog Buying and Trucking, which was a name that we saw someplace. And we shortened it up to Tommy Ryan because, well, you know.
So, Al, are you telling us that Jeff was a party animal?
Well, but in the sense that we all were as kids,
yeah.
There was a lot of joy for life, mm-hmm. in that guy. That's for sure. And I'm hearing that in everybody's comments about him. Yeah.
Yeah. Was he a good drummer?
He was a good drummer. Very solid, excellent sense of rhythm. You bet. His attitude as a musician was kind of like his life attitude. He was just very creative. He was passionate about it. He was such a positive energy all the time in the group. As a drummer, that's a very physical role in the band, and you've got lots of drums to haul around and everything else like that. And I, too, as a youngster, didn't have a lot of experience with what, quote-unquote, disabilities. But, boy, you just never thought of Jeff as having any kind of disability. I mean, there were times when you'd realize, just be confronted by the fact that he had these therapies and things that he had to deal with on a daily basis that were completely outside the realm of what the rest of us were dealing with. But boy, in all our interactions with him, he certainly carried his own weight and more in every way.
What will you take away from knowing Jeff?
Wow, that I love the comment about stamina with Jeff. And Jeff, I see Jeff's stamina has grown out of his passion. Back in those days, his stamina for being involved in what we were doing grew out of his passion for playing music and being creative and interacting with people. And where does that energy and stamina come from? You can draw on a lot of different sources, getting it from the thing that really drives you passionately. Jeff impacted me that way as I look back over the years in our relationship. He certainly impacted me that way and was inspiration. You know, at the time, you don't necessarily see these things as inspiration. You kind of take a lot of things for granted.
Mm-hmm.
But looking back on it now, I definitely see it that way.
Yeah, and the sense of stamina, momentum that one always felt around Jeff makes it such a shock that he suddenly just isn't here doing that anymore.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Thank you, Al. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and we're speaking about the life and spirit of Jeff Benson, remembering him since he passed away on Tuesday, May 26. We've also been speaking with Charlie Kuster and Ray Anderson, Jeff's professional colleagues, as well as Gloria Betcher from the City Council. Last year, as part of the Ames Susquecentennial celebrations, Jeff was part of a history lecture series organized by the Ames History Center. He gave a very enjoyable history and analysis of the growth of business centers in Ames. Let's listen to a little bit of what he had to say. It'd be nice to get his voice in. Just as a point of information, these are excerpts, and it's an abbreviated version of what he said. This is not the whole original text. There's been some shortening.
I'm not a historian. Rather, I'm a city planner. And so I'm interested in the pattern of Ames and how that pattern came to be. I'm interested in such questions as, why do we have our most heavily traveled street separated from our main street by a railroad track with 60 trains per day? Instead of the highway running down the main street with the railroad track and back, like State Center, Boone, Jefferson, and other towns all across the country. Why is our commercial strip on Lincoln Way and South Duff corridor, and why does it get redeveloped every few decades, even though a lot of it's in the floodplain? Why do we have two downtowns, and why are they so different from each other, and why do we have more commercial centers spread all over the place, and why does it take so long for some of our other commercial centers to fill up, and why are some of them still half vacant? I believe that understanding the history of Ames can answer these questions about the pattern of development in the city and tell us a little bit about what to expect in the future. From a planner's perspective, retail business often happens because of these four main factors: population, rooftops, by that I mean residences, transportation, and other businesses being located there. Somebody has to go first. The history of Ames confirms this, and in Ames, transportation is especially important. Only a few years before the founding of Ames in 1864, it was illegal for American citizens, natives were not considered citizens, to even enter most of what is now Iowa. Of course, there was no way to stop people from coming in. The next three decades, you see one of the greatest migrations of humans in history up to that point. You would see the development of a transportation technology that made that migration much less difficult, and it would see the founding of many new states, including Iowa. Now, cities had been locating along the Mississippi, and the people and products who were traveled overland got to the rivers where the cities were, to switch to river transportation so people and products could go other places. Even as Des Moines and Fort Dodge are being established on the Des Moines River for that same reason, by the 1840s, the Iowa government was telling landowners that they were responsible for maintaining the wagon roads that went past their property, 1840s. Sometimes these were established stagecoach or wagon routes, and sometimes these were section line roads laid out on the grid that was being laid over the land by surveyors. So this brings us back to Ames and my first question. Why do we have most of our most heavily traveled street separated from our main street by a railroad track with 60 trains per day instead of the highway running down Main Street with a railroad at the back? Not being an historian, I have not researched when the wagon tracks we now call Lincoln Way were first came into being. But I do know that that road is on the section line, and it was here very early. You know, it came to be known as the Boone Road, so I assume it went from Nevada to Boone. By the time John Blair and a few other railroad builders first came to this area in 1863, Isaac Black owned quite a bit of land bought cheaply from the state, from the county, from north of this wagon track, we now call Lincoln Way, to south of it all the way to the Squaw Creek in some areas, and east to the Skunk River. So Cynthia Duff bought land from Isaac Black and then sold it to John Blair. Cynthia Why didn't you buy John Blair that land on the south side of the railroad tracks? Is my anguish cry every time I have to wait for a train at the South Duff Crossing. And I've been doing that for about 55 years. Well, when I get calmed down after the train passes, I remember that John Blair was there to build a railroad. And he and his guys were checking out locations for roadbeds and bridges. So probably the locations where that railroad crosses the Skunk River and the Squaw Creek were the best locations for bridges. And the road we now call Lincoln Way, it was two wagon tracks and in the mud, and who cared? Mr. Blair probably didn't even notice it. So now let's talk about that plat that shaped our downtown north of the tracks. Established as a railroad stop and developed by land speculators with that in mind, the original plat of Ames is an uninspired design showing limited scope and little foresight. The plan is a mixed design which respected railroad interests and paid little regard to the community's future welfare. That's a quote from Will Page in his study of Ames from 1992. He went on to say, the original town plan encouraged traffic congestion and uneven development in the central business district, while it discouraged a sense of place for the community. Had the town's designers strictly adhered to a gridiron plan, square grid plan, later confusion could have been avoided. The original town plat lacked any public open space, and no public lands were given over to community use. There was no public square, as in most towns, founded with local government purposes in mind. The plat also encouraged no vistas, where a terminus could provide a sense of place for the community. The original town also lacked a focus or a natural center of the development for the development of business and community concerns like a courthouse building. Now, it warms a planner's heart to hear that, you know, a plat with bad planning was important to the future of the community. So let's talk about the downtown. By 1865, the railroad was built, as well as a passenger depot at the east end of Onondaga Street, where the railroad crossed Duff, near that, but south of the tracks. It is thought that groceries and a few other necessities were sold at the depot at first, so this is also our first business. It is obvious that transportation was the reason for this location. Well, this was an extraordinary time. Massive migration, towns popping up on rivers and wherever the railroad went. The people that started the businesses here were confident that this was going to be a town. In 1866, there were 100 people here. By 1869, the railroad across the country already connected all the way across, linking the east and the west coast. Classes had begun at Iowa Agricultural College, and the population had increased by 500%. And by 1875, there was a thriving business district with population, rooftops, and other businesses. The railroad was the transportation that connected Ames to the rest of the country, but transportation within Ames was horse, wagon, and on foot. Therefore, business needs were met mostly in one central location, and living, working, and worshiping near that central location was much preferred. Beautiful large homes were built on Duff and Douglas, some of the corridors that provided easy access to the center. But another advance in transportation was shifting the pattern. Earlier during this Ames 150 celebration, Doug Biggs told the fascinating story of the Ames and College Railroad and how it affected the growth of Ames and the connection of the two parts of Ames. When the state bought the 640 acres that became the college, it was prairie in need of drainage to be productive, with trees only in the stream valleys. One of those streams we now call College Creek, and it fed swamps and ponds along the south side of the campus, making it difficult to travel between across the College Creek and southwest of campus. In 1868, just before classes started at the college, there were only three buildings there and nothing nearby except a few scattered houses. With travel to Ames often a real chore, everyday needs of students and staff had to be provided for on the college grounds. There was a wood plank bridge in 1874 across the Squaw Creek near where 6th Street crosses now. But not everyone expected this condition to continue for long. In 1876, President Ananias Welch and his wife bought land south of the Boone Road and east of what is now Welch and platted three lots. They didn't do that for fun. They did that because they expected to sell and make money. The next year, Professor J.L. Budd and other faculty bought land west of the college land, dividing it into 10 building lots and some larger parcels that provided flexibility for future development. In 1892, the Fourth Ward was annexed and became part of Ames. In 1897, and the Ames College and College Railroad made it possible for people to live in the Fourth Ward, not students, they weren't allowed to live off campus, and go downtown for their needs. So we've heard that the 1890s was a period of growth and progress in Ames, unlike many parts of the country. But I think there's a fascinating story with historical significance about the simultaneous emergence of a business district on the west side of campus. Transportation was also an important factor in development of that area. What we know is West Street now and Woodland was an old stage road or wagon road. So there were already some old roads on the west side of campus that provided transportation. In 1900, the dormitory portion of Old Main burned. The Iowa State College trustees approved rules allowing a limited number of students to live off campus beyond the clubs and fraternities that had been previously allowed. And thus began the business of student housing in Ames. 1907, the electric-powered Ames and College Railroad began service between downtown College Campus and Westgate. So, commercial business began emerging here at the same time. Sometime before 1915, S.V. Whitaker operated the Athletic Drug Company. In 1918, he built a new cement building at 2814 West Street to cater to student trade. And Dr. Swadock later operated this drugstore and lived on the second floor, and it became a gathering place for students. This, of course, is still there. Other businesses came to there. 1912, the Cameron Company Confectionery and Smoke Shop. You get your candy and your tobacco in the same place on Highland. 1917, Frank's Place sold groceries, fruit, veggies, bakery, candies, cigars, tobacco at 2840 West Street, which is west of the building that's now Thumbs. So transportation and the growth of the college and the town allowed Westgate to develop in the first 15 years of the 20th century into a mixed-use district that provided a variety of housing, staple goods, and merchandise, basic services, and entertainment. As we know, the area south of campus was also growing to provide those needs, and it quickly eclipsed Westgate. That's when A.L. Champlin came to town. Railroad, the Fort Dodge Des Moines and Southern, built the line crossing Boone Road at what is now Lynn, that used to be called Swamp Street, and curving south between Welch and Stanton. This helped the subdivision in that area become streetcar suburbs. Imagine that. Ames had suburbs. So in 1909, Champlin built the brick building, and by 1914 it included groceries, meats, bakery goods, soda fountain, drugs, fountain pens, dry goods, notions, a tea room with fresh milk and eggs from the farm every day. And that then became the student gathering place. So by this time, the downtown business people had recognized the value of campus town as a place for business. And the south campus area became the more attractive business location than the Westgate area. And in 1931, the first zoning ordinance was established and this zoning map took effect. So here you have the south campus area with commercial and light industrial. And then you got a tiny little bit of C district, local business, where Westgate was, and there's no other such area anywhere in town. You know what? We still have a special zoning designation for those three or four commercial buildings, that location, the Westgate area.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we speak about people and events in Central Iowa. I am your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, and we've been listening to a lecture delivered by city planner Jeff Benson last year on the history of Ames business centers. He's been discussing the development of the downtown and campus town, the two major business districts historically in Ames. We are honoring the life and spirit of Jeff Benson today in the wake of his passing away on Tuesday, May 26. Charlie Kuster and Ray Anderson, Jeff's professional colleagues at the Ames City Planning Office, are here with us to also speak about their memories of Jeff. Charlie, can you give us just one thing you remember about Jeff as a person?
Before I was even working for the City of Ames, I knew Jeff. We'd socialize at conferences and so on. And then after the presentations and the lectures of the conference, it was social hour. And you're always wondering, well, where's the best place to go, the various establishments on Main Street? Well, I always remember walking around and seeing Jeff's scooter parked in front of some establishment, and he'd gone inside. And I always thought, that's where I'm going to go, because I know that's where the fun's going to be at.
Charlie, you also knew Jeff within the context of the Lincoln Highway Association. Would you tell us a little bit about the role Jeff played in this organization?
Jeff had a passion for history, and in this case, it was transportation history, Lincoln Highway being the first designated cross-country road across the United States from Times Square to San Francisco. The Lincoln Highway Association, back in 1913, worked to establish this route. In the early 1990s, there was thoughts about reestablishing this organization to promote the historical aspect of the Lincoln Highway. And Jeff was one of the charter members of that reconstituted Lincoln Highway Association back in 1992. It was a small group at the time, chapters in various states, but Jeff became the president, served for 3 years from 97 to 2000. And I was just looking at through some of the old newsletters last night, and they had a stated goal during his presidency of increasing the membership of the Lincoln Highway Association. I dug out our membership handbook. Iowa has the largest number of members tied with California. We beat out more high population states like Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania. It was a targeted effort to increase interest in the Lincoln Highway Association. He served as a secretary for 6 years for that organization, taking the minutes of the quarterly meetings of the board and the general membership. But it was passion on particular projects. The Lions Club Tree Park on the east side of Grand Junction was due to Jeff's perseverance on finding the funding, working with the artists and the engineers on the design, layout, construction of that park. I think he was very proud of that. It was a long process. When you started seeing stuff in the ground, he was over there on a regular basis and making sure that it was going to work out right. He was also instrumental on the application for the scenic byway designation across the state of Iowa. And you see that with the signs designating the Lincoln Highway a heritage byway that passed through Ames and through Story County. So he really had a passion on projects. When you give him a task, he will see it through, and there will be visible results when he was done.
Mm-hmm. Well, earlier we heard a segment of a lecture that Jeff gave last year about the history of business in Ames, and he talked some about the Lincoln Highway, so let's listen to what he had to say about that.
In 1911, the American Association for Highway Improvement began pushing for federal funding to states to improve roads. But in 1912, Carl Fisher started another approach to highway improvement. He was already a well-known promoter because he had developed the Indianapolis Speedway. The next project was to begin to gather support for a coast-to-coast rock highway. The Lincoln Highway was to become one of the most successful and well-known examples of the named road, named highway. Other early supporters were Frank Seiberling, who ran Goodyear Tire, Henry B. Joy, who ran the Packard Company, who was a fan of Lincoln's and said, "Let the good roads be built in the name of Lincoln, become the Lincoln Highway as a memorial to Lincoln." They believed that the so-called modern highways were essential for commerce and the growth of America. The Lincoln Highway Association was formed late in 1912, and then it announced that in the summer of 1913 it was going to establish the route by trying to determine the most direct route from New York to San Francisco. So there was a frenzy of people wanting to get their town on the route, and that was pure pre-publicity for the entire operation. And they kept it secret until they announced it. One of the reasons it followed through Ames is because of the bridges across the Squaw and the Skunk that already existed a Luton Arch Bridge built in 1908 across the Swale for $8,000, despite the advice of engineering professors at Iowa State College. Their recommendation for design would have cost $3,000 more, so the county built their version. After it was completed, the professors measured it and advised that it would collapse after a few years of service. 10 years later, in the flood of 1918, it collapsed. Since the route was simply announced, it was existing roads. They didn't build anything at first. They just drove and mapped, connected existing roads. So to follow it was to find a path through the landscape of America. The travelers had to follow many turns to stay on the route. So guidebooks were published that described the route, the conditions, and the accommodations along the way. And you could buy ads for your business in the guidebook. The guidebook would have control points established at recognizable places in the town, and then the mileage between the control places. So they could say, go 3 miles to this spot and turn right. The control point in Ames was the Sheldon Munn Hotel. Like many communities, Ames changed the name of Boone Road to Lincoln Way in 1914. And several businesses in Campus Town changed their name, too, to like the Lincoln Cafe and Lincoln Clothiers and things like that. That happened across the country as well. The other need, of course, was roadside accommodations. The first roadside accommodation is camping in your car along the side of the road. In towns like Ames, established campgrounds. Ours was Maxwell Park, which later became the Ames Cemetery. But it evolved first to having little cabins grouped into courts, and then you had cabins that were connected into motels. And all of these things were seen in Ames. There's been some great research done to show how Ames had a microcosm of the development of modern highway lodging. There was vehicle service downtown by 1929. There were 4 service stations, but Lincoln Way businesses accommodated auto access. They were, you know, big enough lots that you could build a building that had parking and room to get in, get out. You didn't have that on Main Street. And so that evolved to the auto-oriented business. 75 businesses were created along Lincoln Way between Rand and Duff between 1913 and 1958. And today there are, I think, 2 residential houses left. So it really shows the transformation that the Lincoln Highway brought to Lincoln Way from a residential to a commercial street. Early businesses catered to the automobiles and travelers, but the convenience of the type of site you could create on Lincoln Way brought a lot of other business types in. When we begin to see the transformation of auto-oriented commercial business from local ownership to national franchises and companies that was soon to take over. The expansion of the commercial strip down Duff Avenue was the next movement because highway-oriented commercial was so successful. In the 1960s, the growth of Ames' population to 50,000 and beyond attracted a lot of redevelopment of Duff Avenue because that is a benchmark that commercial retail locators look at in locating commercial highway businesses along with traffic counts. And the word is for retailers around the country that you come to Ames, you want to be on Duff Avenue. So I propose we change the name of South 16th Street to Duff Street, and then we can have more places for business to be located. So that is why we've had redevelopment of sites, even in the floodplain, because that's where retail business wants to be, and they can still make money even if they get flooded out. And they always build on the fill so that they have less chance of the new building getting flooded than the previous building. The phenomenon of the enclosed shopping mall had been growing for 20 years when it came to Ames in 1970. Population growth in Ames and in the region, as well as the increase in cars, outstripped the available space and parking downtown. In the 1990s and 2000s, new commercial centers neither corridor nor mall, have been established in the Somerset, Bloomington Road area and the Mortenson, South Dakota area. Somerset, Bloomington Road commercial node was slow to get started. However, there, a survey conducted in the early 2000s of people who owned homes in Somerset revealed that the people were getting exactly what they were looking for, which was a walkable community with services close at hand. The commercial development got a boost when Bob Cummings opened the cafe, and this attracted attention and customers. Businesses and personal services grew in the area, as well as rooftops and populations as the developers invested in buildings. This north area is going to continue to expand, but we need more commercial space up there. Westtown is what we refer to as the area down by Mortenson and South Dakota. This is the other commercial node in the west part of Ames that has also taken time to grow. The interchange was built and roads were improved, Mortenson, South Dakota. Population in the community and the university has grown a lot since its development began. Rooftops grew up to a point, and much of it in apartments that catered to students. Early investors created space for business on the ground floor of those apartments. Brian and Kevin Kinnear opened Westtown Pub, so they were kind of the early local investors who got actual businesses going there, early retailers. But there's been persistently vacant land as well. The lack of available land for residential development out there has prevented those rooftops from expanding like was anticipated to the west and south. And that really reduces the interest of potential retailers when they don't see population close at hand. And the other thing is, we talked about traffic counts and vehicle-oriented. There are thousands of people living within a half mile of this node, but most of them live in apartments, and they travel by bus to campus. And that just doesn't show up on the retail radar screen often enough. Urban retailers are used to the fact that they're looking at people who walk and people who ride mass transit. But typical suburban retailers, you know, are looking at traffic counts. But that's changing, and a pattern of business in Ames is well positioned to take advantage of those changes in transportation, demographics, and lifestyles. Ownership and use of automobiles are declining nationwide. Many younger people, the people who will be establishing households in the future, are interested in walkable neighborhoods and commercial areas close at hand. They will use mass transit if it's offered. Ames has walkable neighborhoods surrounding five different commercial centers, all of which are either thriving or emerging, not declining. This is an available resource, an invaluable resource for a small city such as ours. Certainly, both auto transportation and mass transit offer huge challenges for the future. But if we're willing to meet those challenges, we can continue to expand while keeping Ames a very special and desirable place for you.
We
You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we talk about people and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, and we've been honoring Ames City Planner Jeff Benson in the wake of his passing away on Tuesday, May 26. To all of Jeff's family and friends, we at KHOI wish to express our sincere condolences. Thank you, Charlie Kuster and Ray Anderson, for helping us know Jeff a little bit better. Charlie Kuster and Ray Anderson are Jeff's professional colleagues in the Ames City Planning Department. And thank you also to Councilwoman Gloria Betcher for speaking for the City of Ames. Thank you, Al Biela, for telling us about Jeff the musician. Local Talk is engineered by Rebecca Ryder. Congratulations on your recent marriage, Rebecca. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can also listen to this show and all of your past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Your participation as our audience is what makes KHOI possible. Our most recent tally from the pledge drive is 16,000 with 30% new members. We'll take it and everything else that's donated. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio. And as we go out, we want to say, Jeff, thank you for everything you did for making this a good community. We know you will continue to build community with us, just in a new way now. We are proud of you and love you always, Jeff. And let's go out with Belinda's schedule for music this week.
Hello, this is Belinda Merritt, and I have the live music for May 29th through June 4th. On Friday, May 29th, the Vernon Sensations will open the season for Ames on the Half Shell to be held at Durham Banshell Park, 6th Street and Duff Avenue from 5 o'clock until 8 o'clock p.m. Sister Sarah will be at Snooze Hill Winery, 2183 320th Street, Madrid from 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Kurt Behringer will be at The Bar, 823 Wheeler Street. The Murrays and LaVon McRoberts will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. The Country Two-Piece Band will be at Crossroads Tavern, 1790 Giddings Street, Kelly. Saturday, May 30th, Ryan Sheeler will perform at the Lucky Star Market to be held at ISU Research Park at University and Airport Road from 10 o'clock a.m. until 1 o'clock p.m. The Talent Factory regulars will be at the Talent Factory, 1114 6th Street, Nevada, at 7 o'clock p.m. Paul Doffing, Songs from the Quaking Heart album release party, will be at Bluestem, formerly Zeke's, 3329 Lincoln Way, at 8 o'clock p.m. All ages are welcome, and tickets may be purchased from Eventbrite.com. The Gypsy Lumberjacks and I Like You will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. The Vernon Sensations will be at Overboard Sports Bar, 1101 Army Post Road, Des Moines. On Sunday, May 31st, Nice Bangs will be at Snooze Hill Winery, 2183 320th Street, Madrid, from 2 o'clock until 5 o'clock p.m. Mr. Baber's Neighbors will be at Prairie Moon Winery, 3801 West 190th Street, from 3 o'clock until 6 o'clock p.m. Canadian singer-songwriter Anna Texiera, with opening act Sean Houston, will be at Bluestem, formerly Zeke's, 3329 Lincoln Way, at 8 o'clock p.m. All ages are welcome, and tickets may be purchased from Eventbrite.com. Wednesday, June 3rd, Danny Grouse will be at Bike Night at the Tip Top, 201 East Lincoln Way. On Thursday, June 4th, Punch Drunk Monkey Funk will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. That's all I have for this week. Thank you.